A fear of drowning kept her away from water nearly all her life. But in 2011, she found herself drowning with nearly every breath. She thought it was walking pneumonia, but that did not account for the swelling in her legs, unusual changes in her skin, and her bone-weary fatigue. A trip to the hospital soon revealed she was suffering renal failure. But despite what might have been a death sentence, Carol Marlene Summers lived a healthy and productive life through the miracle of dialysis, a treatment that gave my family over 100 months longer with my mother, a therapy that has extended countless lives since its inception in the early 1940s. And throughout the greater Seattle area, thousands of kidney patients have received the gift of life since 1962 through the tireless efforts of Northwest Kidney Centers. Joyce Jackson is the CEO of Northwest Kidney Centers, and she's next on Spotlight on the Sound.
Welcome to Spotlight on the Sound, a weekend magazine focusing on Puget Sound luminaries whose passion for touching lives is making a difference in our community. And now your host, David Summers.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight on the Sound, Salem Radio Seattle's weekend showcase of the hardest working hearts in our community. It's our hope that you come away from today's show not only with a greater familiarity with a truly great program, but with the inspiration to become involved and to help make the Puget Sound a better and brighter place to live. With me today is Joyce Jackson, the CEO of Northwest Kidney Centers. Welcome, Joyce.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Joyce, just do a little bit of a anatomy lesson or physiology lesson. What bodily processes make kidneys so vital to human life?
Well, the kidneys really are quite special organs. We are born usually with two kidneys, and they're about the size of a fist in the middle of our back. That's where you'd find them. And the kidneys do three very important functions. They regulate the body chemistry of our bodies, and particularly they filter out toxins that are created from the food we eat.
Okay.
So when we eat food, we produce certain chemicals that are not good for us and need the kidneys to filter them out. They also take out the excess fluid that our body doesn't need. So while we drink or eat soups and soft things, the kidneys create urine, which then is excreted from the body. If our kidneys don't work, we don't have a way of getting rid of that fluid. And the third major thing that the kidneys do is they secrete hormones and they regulate things like our bones and our blood chemistries.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they don't work, those hormones aren't excreted and then we get out of whack.
Mm. Well, now, what might be some of the major causes of kidney disease and kidney failure?
Well, kidney disease is primarily caused by diabetes and high blood pressure and genetic conditions. Diabetes is an epidemic, and diabetes causes a whole lot of harm to our bodies. But one of the major organs that are affected by chronic long-term diabetes are the kidneys. And diabetes, if it's not well controlled, can start to really harm the kidneys and make them work less well. High blood pressure is the same way. It's a silent disease, but when our blood pressure is really high, our kidneys are damaged and can be permanently damaged. And then also genetic kidney disease. There are some conditions people are born with, or there are some conditions like taking too many over-the-counter pain medicines that can harm our kidneys, and that as well can cause kidney damage. When the kidneys function less than 15% of their capacity, we call that kidney failure.
Thank you for providing a little bit of clarity there on that. So you've already mentioned some of the things that the kidneys are responsible for. How does that play itself out when someone's kidneys aren't working properly.
At the beginning, you don't feel anything. And that's kind of a problem, really, because it's a silent disease until usually about 75% of kidney function is gone. Now, you can be born with one kidney or have one kidney removed for various reasons and still do fine with one kidney. But when together, your two kidneys or your single kidney start to get down to about 25% or 30% of function, some subtle symptoms start. And they're so nonspecific, you don't really know what they mean. You're tired. You may have nausea. Yeah. You may have swelling in your legs. But these are things that are so generalizable that you don't think to yourself, oh, I'm having kidney problems.
Right.
And it's not until you potentially feel really sick and go to the hospital that in the worst case scenario, you suddenly find out you have kidney failure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And obviously that's what happened with my mom. And at least she, found out before it got any worse. But well, let's discuss how your organization came about. What is the backstory to Northwest Kidney Centers?
Well, it's a story I love to tell because it's quite unique. In the 1940s in Holland, a physician was troubled by the fact that kidney failure resulted in certain death.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought he could design a dialysis machine, and he used a new product, cellophane, that was used for sausage casings, and developed a dialysis machine with surplus material from a German war munitions factory in Holland at the time. And he actually created a device that would clean the blood of toxins and take out extra fluid and perform dialysis. And he saved lives with that that kidney. It's Dr. Kolff who invented that. But unfortunately, only people who had temporary kidney failure could be benefited by Dr. Kolff's machine because there wasn't a way to repeatedly access the blood through an artery or a vein and then do a treatment every couple days like we do today. And so after a few, it required surgery to access the blood. And after a while, there were no vessels left in someone's body. And so throughout the 50s, kidney doctors were very troubled by the fact that if you had permanent kidney failure, there was no way to provide ongoing dialysis treatment. Then in Seattle, Washington, in 1960, a really revolutionary thing happened. A kidney doctor named Dr. Scribner, Belding Scribner, woke up in the middle of the night. And he said, I think with this new product called Teflon, I could develop a way to create a device that would replace all those surgeries. And then somebody with permanent kidney failure could get this life-saving treatment over and over again. Again, a new biomaterial was around, Teflon.
Yeah.
We know it for frying pans. Yeah. But he used Teflon and developed a device so that the blood wouldn't clot. And his very first patient in 1960 lived 11 years on dialysis.
Wow.
So it was an overnight success. So really the invention of dialysis as a therapy for kidney failure started here.
Wow. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And then what happened is that was at the University of Washington Hospital. The first two or three patients were treated, and then they said, we have to develop a program so people can access this wonderful therapy. And the community came together, raised funds, and put together the world's first dialysis treatment organization, and that's the Northwest Kidney Centers.
Number one.
Number one in the world.
Wow.
Yeah. So we're almost 55 years old, and we were founded out of this great invention that came out of Seattle.
You know, and so many times I invite on organizations, have no idea how awesome they are until they start talking. We learn all these great things. So today, what are some of the ways that the Northwest Kidney Centers are providing assistance to kidney patients and their families?
Well, thank you for asking. Our mission is to promote health and quality of life of people with kidney disease.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that through patient care, but also through extensive education and research. So one of the main things we do is we provide treatment to 4 out of 5 people in King County who need dialysis because they have kidney failure. Mm. And that's today, there are 1,600 people getting a treatment. It takes about 4 hours, but it cleans their blood, mm-hmm. takes out the extra fluids, gives them the hormones that they need to keep mm-hmm. their bones strong. And then they walk out of our facilities. We have 15 facilities. And then they go home and they're back to life. So we provide a lot of patient care. But we also really believe in public education and education of doctors and nurses who don't work in our field but work with people who have kidney problems so that everyone is well informed about the challenges and ways to best work and support the health of people with kidney disease. And then finally, we conduct research. Right from the beginning, we said, we're not really sure how to do this treatment. Let's be innovators. And for 55 years, we have been involved in clinical studies to find the best ways to provide the therapy and drugs and other forms of treatment. So patient care, education, mm-hmm. and research, and we're growing all the time because kidney disease is actually on the rise.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and that makes sense with the rise in the other conditions that cause it. You mentioned education. I know that you teach a lot of classes. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us a little bit about these classes and how people listening might be able to participate?
Sure. We have a whole program called our Chronic Kidney Disease Program. Chronic kidney disease means kidney problems that aren't going to reverse themselves right mm-hmm. away. And that our program is designed for people who have gone to their primary care doctor or maybe been sent to a kidney specialist and they're told, you know, your kidneys are starting to not work very well. They may be half or three quarters less, a function gone.
Right.
And so that's when people start to get very concerned and want to learn more. So if they call Northwest Kidney Centers, we will offer to them a series of classes, one-on-one or with a small group, maybe mm-hmm. 9-10 people. And they can bring their family members or friends with them. One class is called Choices. And so we help people understand, now, what does it mean when your kidneys don't work? And what are the treatment choices? And how can I best prepare if I need to look for a kidney transplant
right.
or go to dialysis? Then after they go through that two-hour class, people may say, I'm kind of interested in home dialysis. If I need dialysis, I want to do it myself and have the independence of that. So then we have two classes called home hemodialysis or home peritoneal dialysis. There's two kinds of treatments. Mm-hmm. And that allows people to kind of delve deeper into what would this really be like. Yeah. Some people say, I want a kidney transplant. So then we have a class called Next Step Kidney Transplant. And then we help them understand, now, what does that mean? And transplant's not a cure. What are the ramifications of having a kidney transplant? And then how do I go about getting one?
Mm-hmm.
We also have several nutrition classes. Because one thing everybody can do, we all do, is we eat. And one thing you can do to slow kidney disease is to learn how to avoid certain foods or eat more of other kinds of foods. And so we have a class, and then we have individual nutrition education. And then after you get a transplant, we have a class called Living Well with a Transplant. So that's an option, too, for people.
Well, it sounds like you run the gamut of all the information that an individual is going to need, whether they're just learned about having kidney disease or kidney failure, or if they've gone all the way through with a transplant.
Right. And I do want to reference our website, too, because there's a lot of educational links and materials on our website, nwkidney.org. And that is a great resource, and also links to other resources. So that's a great way for people to surf the web, so to speak, and get what they're interested in learning more about.
One of the things that my family discovered when my mom had to get on dialysis was just how expensive dialysis is. Could you describe that expense a little bit and why it is so expensive?
Well, the kidney is the only organ that we can replace with a machine outside the body. And we invented this, 50, 60 years ago, mm-hmm. but it still is the only organ that can be replaced, albeit not perfectly, but can be replaced with a therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And so it requires that someone go to a center or do self-treatment at home at least 3 times a week, sometimes more than that. And usually the therapy is 4 hours. So it's and some people do their treatment overnight. So it's a therapy that's 12 to 20 hours a week of therapy. some patients describe it as a part-time job you can't quit.
Yeah.
So that involves the expense of having a center to go to, nurses and other staff to support you, nutritionists, social workers, nurses and doctors, all the care team support the person as they go through this therapy and help them live as well as possible, live the life they were meant to live. Also, people who are on dialysis need medications to deal with some of the hormone imbalances. They see their kidney specialist at least once a month, sometimes more often. They sometimes have surgeries, and they sometimes need to go to the hospital to deal with medical conditions. Many people with kidney disease have heart cardiovascular disease, and so there's a fair amount of interfacing with the healthcare system, and all that adds up to the costs.
But the good news is that Medicare covers that.
Yes, for most people, if they're regardless of age, they ultimately may be eligible for Medicare to pay for all their healthcare needs. Now, why is that? Well, back in 1960, when we were the only ones doing this, or there were just a few centers in the country, there was literally no funding. And a number of people went to Washington, D.C. and said to Congress, there is a life-saving therapy for a small number of people. We really think there should be a safety net program. And so the Medicare program was revised in 1972 to say if you have kidney failure, the government will pay for your health care, your hospitals, your doctors, your medications, your dialysis. It's the only area of Medicare where you get coverage based on a disease, not based on an age. And so you can be 4 years old, 20 years old, 50 years old. Normally, those folks are not on Medicare. We usually think age 65 and older. But if you have kidney disease, eventually, sometimes it's right away, sometimes it takes 3 years, but eventually you will be eligible for Medicare coverage. And that gives people a big sigh of relief because they know that there's a safety net to pay for expenses.
What are the hopes that an individual will be able to get a transplant once they've been diagnosed with kidney failure? And what happens after they get a transplant?
Great questions. Nationally, there are about 17,000 kidney transplants a year, but there are over 100,000 people on the waiting list for a kidney throughout the country. So you can see that we're not doing nearly enough kidney transplants. We have many wonderful kidney transplant programs in this town and around the country that are ready to do a kidney transplant if only there were enough organs. So why aren't there enough organs? There are two sources of kidneys. There are deceased donors, people who are otherwise healthy but pass away and may have two kidneys that can be used for a transplant. The number of deceased donors has been relatively flat in this country for quite some time, for decades. It used to be that if there were car accidents, that was people didn't wear seatbelts or they didn't wear helmets on the motorcycle, that young people with good kidneys might be donors.
Or donor cycles, as I've heard them called.
Right, but we've done a great job in proving safety. Yeah. And so that's been great, but it hasn't added to the deceased donor pool. Living donors is relatively new in the last 20, 30 years. So now there are people who are healthy who say, my husband, my daughter, I want to give a kidney to my parent. And they have to be very healthy, but if they are, then they can potentially be a donor. The number of living donors peaked for the last few years, and now it's really stable. So that is an area for opportunity. It's a relatively safe thing to do, to donate your kidney. And there are people that just step right up to the plate and do that. After you get a kidney, you have to take what's called immunosuppressive medications to suppress your body from rejecting the organ.
Right, just like any organ for that matter.
Any organ, right. And so there are risks of taking those medicines. There are side effects. And also, it means your body's suppressed from fighting other things. So there's a higher cancer risk, et cetera. But for many people, they take that risk on eagerly because we like to say for a lot of folks, a kidney transplant is really the best therapy. People are sometimes surprised that not everyone wants a kidney transplant or can get it. But of all our patients, about 25% want one and are on the list waiting for one. It's not 100%. Sometimes people are elderly or their health is really frail and they wouldn't go through a surgery well. or they think dialysis is a better treatment for them and they don't want a transplant. So it's not for everyone, but for those who want it, it's a great therapy.
Now, you have mentioned some of the things that you're involved in, including research. Where do you see research going as far as improving the lot of kidney patients?
For many decades, as a country, we spent a lot of focus and time and money on treating people with kidney failure, and we were not investing in the research to try to prevent it, slow it, stop it, mm-hmm. or treat it better. And we have some really stunning statistics about how few research trials have been done in our field. It's like we invented the therapy before we really understood the disease and put all our energy into the therapy.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we don't want to step back from doing kidney treatment, a dialysis or transplant. But in the last decade here in Seattle, we have collaborated with the University of Washington to really give a huge impetus to kidney research, to look at better medicines, better forms of therapy, and to even do things like trialing the wearable artificial kidney, a totally different device. So we have a lot more to do to slow kidney disease and to treat it better. But we have built in this town, through our Kidney Research Institute, one of, if not, the nation's leading research institute for kidney disease.
Wow. Now, what about how you fund yourselves? Do you have upcoming fundraisers? How do you keep your organization functional?
Well, that's my job as CEO, is to think about how do we get the money to pay for our patient care, education, and research. Our main source of funding is insurance. So the insurance companies that the insurance people get through their workplace, or if they're older or not working, there's Medicare and Medicaid. So we do look to insurance, and insurance does fund the treatment of dialysis as well as the other related services. Insurance, though, while it's there as a funding mechanism, doesn't really cover the cost of care. So we have to look to other sources. And we do fundraising. We are a philanthropic organization. And so we have individuals who are touched by kidney disease or care mm-hmm. about people who have kidney problems who donate to us. We have many individuals who send donations. We have two fundraising events. And in our website, we share stories and give people the opportunity to give a gift through that mechanism. So we're all about telling our story and inviting people to be part of the journey with us of helping people with kidney disease through their donations.
Now, and you mentioned you had some upcoming events. When are those events?
We do. On May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, that's how I'm remembering it, we have our 14th annual Breakfast of Hope. It's at the Westin Hotel. It starts at 7:30. Ends at 8:45. And we've done this 13 years in a row, and it's a fabulous event. About 800 people come, and from the community, if they can get up that early. And we share stories of people who have done remarkable things despite kidney problems. And we talk about how all of us can do simple things to lower our risk of kidney disease. It's actually one of our educational opportunities. Mm-hmm. You might ask, what should I do? Well, you can eat less salt, because salt fosters high blood pressure, and then that can harm your kidneys. Mm-hmm. So we talk about that at our Breakfast of Hope. This year, we've got two remarkable speakers or people we're focusing on. One person who's lived for 50 years with kidney failure.
Oh, my goodness.
And she's thriving.
That's amazing.
So come and meet her. And then also a gentleman who started kidney treatment in fourth grade. And he's gone through Harvard and is a science teacher in a public school and using his body as his number one example of how the body works. So they'll be telling their stories, and as will others. Jean Anderson is our MC, and we'll invite anybody to join us at the Breakfast of Hope on May 5th. In the fall, we have a gala. That's for people who like to dress up and go out in mm-hmm. the evening. And we raise funds at our Discovery Gala for kidney research. The Breakfast of Hope funds benefit patient care, which is our local community. Kidney research benefits people everywhere in the world. So we invite folks to join us at any of these events.
Now, what do you tell somebody who's listening, who maybe they have someone with kidney disease or kidney failure in their life, or maybe they themselves have been diagnosed, and they want to get involved, they want to learn more about your organization, they want to help out, what would you tell that person?
Well, there's various ways to help. One is to go to our website, and you'll see there's a How You Can Help button, and we offer volunteer opportunities. You can volunteer at the many public events we go to where we talk about kidney disease. You can volunteer to help out at the Breakfast of Hope coming up on May 5th. You can volunteer to help people who are getting treatments in our centers, because we do encourage volunteers to help out, escort people to and from their car, you know, various ways of being a helping hand. Another way you can help is to raise awareness of kidney disease. Kidney disease is common. 1 in 10 Americans has some form of kidney disease. It's harmful, but it's treatable. And so we want people to know that this silent disease is something that, if detected, can be addressed. And so anybody can do that by talking about Northwest Kidney Centers, inviting people to go to our website to learn more, talking to their own doctor and saying, hey, have I been tested? My kidney's been tested. Are they okay? That's a way they can help themselves, but they can help us, because our growth is inexorable. We have more and more people every year that need treatment.
Yeah.
We don't want to build more centers. We want to put ourselves out of business.
Yeah.
And so you can help Northwest Kidney Centers by helping yourself and slowing
right.
kidney disease if you have it detected.
And what was your website again?
nwkidney.org.
That website, nwkidney.org. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on today, Joyce.
Thank you very much. It's been my pleasure.
And thank you for listening to today's conversation with Joyce Jackson, CEO of Northwest Kidney Centers. We'll be on next week at this time with another passionate voice in the community who is changing the sound one life at a time. So until then, remember to shine a light and stay sound. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Spotlight on the Sound. If you would like more information on any of the guests or organizations featured on this program, or if you have recommendations or suggestions for future programs, please email webmaster@salemradioseattle.com or call 206-443-8200. That's 206-443-8200. Thanks for listening today, and join us again next week at the same time for Spotlight on the Sound.